You have one unheard message.
Hi, I was calling Current, the influencer marketing platform, but I think I just got redirected to a bunch of people listening to a podcast. Well, anyways, I was calling Current because I was told they could help get my brand set up on TikTok Shop and even build out an affiliate program of content creators promoting my brand and even have those content creators go on live streams and promote my product there. Wow, I could really use Current. I also heard that the brands they work with are making millions in sales. I guess I'll just go to their website at current.tech.
Introducing Wondersuite from Bluehost.com, the tool that makes WordPress wonderful for everyone. Website creation is hard, but now with Bluehost, you can answer a few simple questions about your business and goals, and the Wondersuite tools will automatically lay out your WordPress website or store in minutes. Seriously. From there, you can customize your design, pick your brand colors, and add blocks. No custom theme or coding required. You'll get content suggestions that you can keep or revise, and with Yoast SEO built in, we automatically help you get found in search engines. From step-by-step guidance to suggested plugins to an AI-powered help bot, our built-in tools make WordPress wonderful for everyone. Whether you're a beginner or a pro, you can join over 2 million Bluehost users. Go to bluehost.com/wondersuite. That's bluehost.com/wondersuite.
Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of Millennial Money. Today we're going to be talking about Evergrande. We're going to be talking about our first sponsor for the channel, Motley Fool. Thank you very much. Link in the description. We're going to be talking about crypto, stocks, real estate, and some of the latest stock market drama, which we had a lot of today. It was a very stressful day. So let's get started. Jeremy, what's the latest? What's going on?
Well, there's a whole lot going on. Holy smoke, this ain't no joke, because we're getting our flapjacks flipped out here. NASDAQ down almost 3% today. It was a rough one, man. I mean, it was a countless stocks down 4, 5, 6, 7%. Anything seen as risk on, man, did it get hurt today. I mean, just absolutely devastated. The one stocks that held pretty decent today is needs-based plays. Like I was looking at Walgreens today, Pfizer, Honest, anything, Switch, which is a data center company, any of those business models that are needs-based seem to hold well. So, but yeah, Graham, what do you have to say about all this?
Yeah, speaking of needs-based, you know what really didn't go down today is Wynn. Yeah. I think it's already, surprisingly enough, I was hoping it would drop like below 80 today. Surprise, it didn't do it, barely moved. It's a needs-based company. People have to gamble somewhere. And if they're in Macau, they're going to go to Wynn. So you might also notice that, thank you, Graham Fan, for providing me with this. And might be a good time to also mention we got our first sponsor today, the Motley Fool. And so what we've done, we've kind of done a unique partnership with them. Each of us is submitting to them five of our stocks, and then they're going to issue a report tracking all of them to see whose five stocks end up doing the best. So if you want to see the five stocks that I picked for this kind of competition-ish thing, the link is down below in the description. We'll highly recommend. Just check it out, and you'll be able to see which ones I did and how they perform over the next few months. I think I'll win, but Kevin, good luck. Jeremy, good luck with Patchy Chef. And Andre, luck with your cryptocurrencies.
The S&P 500 can only go up so much over the next few months, Graham.
Well, you'll see. But anyway, the link to that is down below in the description. I'm very thankful that they sponsored us.
Yeah. Thank you, Motley Fool. Wait, yeah. So how much did the market drop this today? 3%? What is that?
Almost 3% for the NASDAQ, which is a...
Wake me up when it's like 10 or 20%, bro. That's like a every hour in crypto.
Oh, yeah. No, don't worry. When it drops 10 to 20%, Bitcoin will be at 10K. So you'll know. You'll be aware. You'll be very
I'll be
aware.
Buying. I would love to be buying at 10K. Hey, actually,
go ahead. No. Go ahead.
So last week, you guys remember we were talking about Evergrande, and I remember mildly debating with Kevin about whether or not they were going to make their payments. And Kevin's like, oh, but don't worry. They've made their payments. They said they were going to make it. And I was like, yeah, they're saying a lot of things. And look what happened. They didn't make the payment.
But wait a second. Don't they have 30? They have 30 days before it's late, right? This is their grace period. Am I wrong here? They have 30 days.
I believe they're already late, but yeah, I guess they do have 30 days to pay it. But
well, it's kind of like you know, you miss your rent payment on the first, you're late. Now you owe a late fee. You're in default, right? But then you get sort of this right of redemption might come later, but default action can start occurring after 30 days. Bondholders can start staking their claims, right? Look, Andre, you're right. I mean, last week when the Evergrande crisis kind of first started, I thought, okay, they're all everybody's saying it's going to be contained. The analyst, Jerome Powell, Christine Lagarde over at the ECB, European Central Bank. And I believed it, but every day I read more and more, and I'm like, wait a minute, these guys are like potentially totally shysters, and that's putting it politely, because when you start noticing people who have like $50 million invested in and they're insiders and they're dumping their shares, and you're starting to notice the bond market discounting Evergrande's bonds by what to like 30 cents on the dollar or whatever. So you're going, wait, maybe things aren't as peachy and rosy, right? And it's right. Not just that company. And that's the crazy thing, is the banks that lent Evergrande a lot of money, their stocks are getting wrecked. And so this is where this weekend I started getting a little nervous. I'm like, oh man, this could potentially end up getting worse, especially since, as Andre said, they said they were going to make the payment by Thursday. Thursday rolls around, no evidence they made the payment, and the people who were supposed to receive the payment didn't get a payment. So yeah, to me, it's messy. And I honestly think that's why the market had such heart palpitations, mostly today, but also a little bit yesterday. I don't know. What do y'all think?
My question is, did this change for any of you guys' perspectives as far as how this will impact us on a global level? Because in my video, when I talked about it, I just looked at the top four bondholders, but I don't know if there's anything I'm missing, if there's anything I'm not looking at, like you said, whether it's the banks or if they have deeper connections and relationships that they're not disclosing, or offshore bank accounts with an insane amount of money. Like, I don't know what to look at, but I just looked at the top four bondholders, which were just basically hedge funds and, the BlackRock and those kinds of companies, where their stake is, I think, no more than 0.5% for any of the given bondholders. So is there anything else that we're not looking at? Why the market would be so scared of
real estate debt, right? It's in addition to bonds, it's also now the real estate debt itself. If the real estate, if properties are getting written down like crazy, now you basically have set up this sort of like micro 2008, where it's like, wait a minute, you had, just to make math simple, you had $100,000 property. Chinese banking laws were so ridiculous, you could have like $100,000 to $110,000 loan on it because you were developing it or whatever. But now, if that property is worth $30,000 or $40,000, that loan is way upside down. And there are smaller banks, and when I say smaller, they're still big. Like, there's this one bank, I can't remember the name. I just talked to it. It was like Min Sheng or something like that. Anyway, I did a video on it. And they have $600 billion under assets under management. And a lot of the loans they made were to Evergrande. Well, now these loans are at massive risk of default. And what's so crazy is I looked up Lehman Brothers' size right before the collapse, and they also had about $600 billion under management. The problem was the underlying assets were only worth like $25 billion. So Lehman Brothers led to the 2008 contagion, which there were obviously many other crazy factors going on in the market. But yeah, I mean, here's something similarly sized just 13 years later. Crazy.
So do you think that this has the potential to actually be a Lehman Brothers-sized collapse that will affect the global economy? Or do you think it's just going to be contained in China?
Yeah, I think we should all answer that one. I'll answer quickly and just say I don't think this is the start of like a Lehman Brothers kind of a collapse or great recession again. The banking systems are much more resilient now than they ever have been, at least so we're told, right? But where am I trying to go with this? I have no idea. now I totally just lost my train of thought. But what I'm trying to say.
It's more contained.
Go ahead, Graham.
Oh, you were saying it was more contained than it was.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So more contained. But really, what I think markets are reacting to is the potential. It's always that uncertainty and the fear over it. And I think that's what markets are reacting to, is a lot of uncertainty. And I think crypto is kind of like our first, our first sort of a defense wall, so to speak. And so the more crypto gets beaten, the more I think that could kind of spill over into our markets.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, I think maybe the first was actually the high growth stocks getting devastated over the springtime. Then you get this Chinese situation, the debt crisis over there. And is this the time the bubble really pops? Because I think if you really look at that market, it's hard not to think it's a bubble, right? Average it's like 29x income to property value. It's out of control. And in a lot of cities, it's 40X. I mean, there's no doubt. If you look at the numbers, it's hard not to say it's a bubble over there. It's just, is this a time it really pops? And I think it's a domino game, right? It's like if Chinese real estate slows or stops, grinds to a halt, and let's say the Chinese banking system's hurt in a major way, and they're not able to prevent this, right? What if all of a sudden, that bleeds into something else, and then that bleeds into something else, and then maybe the crypto markets hit the stock markets? It's like dominoes falling, right, the wrong way. And I don't know if you guys saw, there was an interesting study Michael Burry had posted recently, which was something like he's basically saying like the stock market doesn't work efficiently. And it was kind of around like for every $1 put into a stock, it really acts as $5 put into the stock.
Yeah.
And going the other way, it could work the same way. Like a $1 outflow is actually a $5 outflow. So it was just an interesting study, really, really in depth. I've even gotten to take a look at it. But what's your two cents there, Graham?
Yeah, I agree. I don't know. I feel like a lot of it's going to be contained. It doesn't seem like a lot of U.S. companies have like too big of an exposure. I think for China, it's going to be pretty disastrous if they default. I think the biggest thing would be real estate. And I think people's perception of real estate as a way to store their wealth. I mean, a lot of people are going to be burned by this and they'll think twice before they go and put a deposit down on a property. So I think it could be quite some time. I mean, and we're assuming, by the way, the worst case where this thing just topples over, nothing happens, they're not able to structure their debt. Maybe they're, China could make an example of them and say, this is why capitalism is bad. But I don't know. I'm a firm believer that most likely the fear is going to be worse than the outcome. And sure, it's a little bit concerning that, China originally came out and said, don't worry, we got it, guys. And then whispers to the banks, hey, just prepare for this to get a lot worse. So they say one thing and then they also say another. So we have no clue.
Yeah. And Andre, what's the Tether situation with the Evergrande? Didn't they own a bunch of Tether or something like that? I don't really remember exactly what's going on there.
Yeah. It's kind of another case of like Evergrande telling people like, oh, don't worry, everything's going to be fine. And just, I think it's against Tether's interest to be honest in this situation and be like, yeah, we own a ton of, Evergrande's assets and bonds. Of course, they'd never admit that. So I don't think anyone knows exactly how they're exposed to it. But so far as what they said they own no assets from Evergrande. So apparently everything should be fine. But again, tomorrow we could find out, just kidding, 90% of Tether's assets are in Evergrande bonds. Who knows? Like to Graham's point, maybe we have a lot of investors and consumers. I wonder if China gets devastated, how much would that affect the U.S. market? If people are going to get hurt, would they travel less? Would they come here less? Like, how would that really impact the rest of our economy here, since we do so much business with China? I mean, even in Vegas here, all of our casinos, like Chinese New Year, that's like the biggest event that casinos put together here. So I'm wondering, like, even for Vegas, for us, that could be a really big deal.
One thing I will say about Vegas is it's on fire right now because of all the Americans coming out here, right? And then also Wynn CEO said recently that they just opened up, Europeans can start coming over here. I don't know if it's November. And the Wynn CEO said that they went from basically no bookings out of Europe to instantly like hundreds of people a day trying to book rooms at the Wynn. So, yeah, international travel, obviously in the United States, we can kind of travel, you know, at least inside the United States where we want now. But still, there's a lot of international travel that's still blocked that they're just starting to allow again, which I don't think a lot of people are even factoring in. So,
that's a good point.
But yeah, we don't have the stimulus pump too this year. That's really intriguing. Like I don't know if anybody really knows how much the stimulus pump really helped us. And I'm talking about, when I say the stimulus pump, I'm talking about the money that actually went into people's hands, those $1,000 checks or 2,000 or whatever they were. And what was there, three rounds of that? You know, I don't know if we'll ever know how much that really helped the stock market, the crypto market, and just overall people's spending. I don't think we'll ever know the truth there, but it's interesting because now we just don't have that, right? And I think unemployment has went away for the most part, and I just wonder what the effects are of that over the next year.
Yeah,
I want to hear what you guys think. There's so many studies and all this research, and they're like, oh, we're not really seeing the unemployment rate decline in areas that, let's say, ended the $300 unemployment boost before other states, because like half of our states ended the boost, half of them didn't. Now they're all done. The $300 boost is done for all of them. But there were some studies that were done on that, and the studies were saying, oh, we're not really seeing a difference in people getting employed. Maybe it wasn't a matter of people getting paid to stay at home. But then when I actually talk to business owners, the business owners are like, oh, I got a flood of new business job applications right around September 3rd, right when the boost expired here in California, right? And it's like, yeah, I mean, look, it makes sense, but it's like, how did the studies miss it? I don't know.
Yeah, well, Birkin bags went up in value, so we could say that much. $1,200 Birkin bags. Perfect.
Graham, you remember that? Yeah. Detroit Birkin bags?
Yep. Good investments.
How's he doing?
I don't know. I haven't talked to him in, probably over a year and a half. He was one of my first victims of Millennial Money. Kevin and I flew out to visit him in person after that video got like a million views in like a week, which is wild. We flew out to Detroit, met with him in person, gave him some advice on spending. But yeah, he's spending a lot of money on Birkin bags that he explained to us are good investments. He buys them at 15, 20 grand, keeps them in good condition, can sell them later for 25.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Kevin, I'm curious about the whole Senator Warren and Jerome Powell situation. What's that drama? I didn't follow that, but I know they don't really like each other.
No, not at all. Janet Yellen just railed on him this morning for basically she said what I'm going to give you just the short gist of it. Basically, she said there are too many Republicans in charge of our finances, including Jerome Powell, who is a registered Republican. And Republicans are the reason the seeds were planted for the 2008 Great Recession. And now she thinks Jerome Powell is planting the same kinds of seeds, that he is a dangerous person and that she will not support his renomination. Now, personally, I think this is just Elizabeth Warren saying crazy stuff because that's what gets her the views. That's what gets people talking about her. That gets her the media attention. It's a very AOC-esque strategy. And I'm not saying it's wrong, but it's a very, look, they're progressives. That's what they say. Anything they could say to beat up on the complicated institutions that could have, quite frankly, contributed to the 2008 recessions or wealthy people or corporations or whatever, that's what they're going to do. So if Elizabeth Warren in a Senate hearing can go in front of Jerome Powell and diss him to his face and get a ton of press for it, totally. The next guy, literally the very next senator, who has equal voting power as her, you know, you've got 100 senators, equal voting power, same status. Well, maybe not social status, but anyway, voting power status. Because, you know, well, I really respect the chairperson of the Federal Reserve, and I really look forward to working with him. He got zero press attention. She got mega press attention, right? That's all it is, man. It's a game. It's politics of fear.
Yeah, and it's not like she went, from my understanding, it's not like she went into super detail or something about, like, Yeah, you know, if you were really that against him, you would go into detail like he did this and he should have done this instead and he did this. It's like if you're just going to talk crazy, like that's just crazy talk, you know.
That reminds me. It's so interesting you bring that up because it just triggered me. AOC, like a month ago, I remember making a video going about Jerome Powell's getting fired, and it was all about how like AOC wanted Jerome Powell kicked out and replaced. And I just unconsciously made that link between them because they're always kind of doing this sort of stuff. So I wonder if she kind of like Warren took a cue off AOC, and that's what led me to dive into AOC's financial disclosures and go, you don't know the first thing about investing. You're the last person who should be telling Jerome Powell how to run the country.
I think he's doing a great job. I think he's great. He's doing a really good job. I don't see what's wrong with him personally, but it's not even a Republican stance or a Democratic stance. I just think he's doing a great job. Mm-hmm. I don't know. What do you guys think?
I think he's doing a good job too. I think the only complaint seems to be from people who think that he should be not only doing more, but also risking inflation. It seems like it's one of those two things. I don't have any complaints so far.
Yeah.
Well. Yeah. It's tough because, I mean, if you're going to blame him for overspending, let's just say like they feel like he's overspending, which we don't know what Warren's stance is on this. Don't they want more spending? Don't they want more pumping of money out there to certain groups of people and things like that? It's just where it's like,
they want the money allocated so that it doesn't benefit the wealthy. That is where I think this is. And they think his policies have benefited, you know, billionaires, and stock prices have you know, gone to record highs, and that benefits the people who have the extra money to invest. Whereas the people on the bottom, aren't getting the equal benefit of the rest of the economy.
Well, that's why we're talking about the $1 trillion coin again. It's like every time the government's running out of money or we need to raise money, it's like, oh, $1 trillion coin, and it just becomes popular again. Did you guys hear about that? Did you see that story?
No, tell us about it, Andre.
Yeah, I did a video about it, which like bombed. I don't know how I had titled it wrong or what happened. I thought it was a really interesting story, but basically the Congress can't come together and increase the debt ceiling. I think the debt ceiling right now is like $28.5 trillion. Mm-hmm. And every now and again, we run into the ceiling and we have to increase it. But since the middle of the 1990s with Newt Gingrich, when he became the House Speaker, he basically eliminated the era of when Congress could come together and just, they were like, hey, let's just increase the debt ceiling. It's the obvious thing to do because it pays for, you know, Social Security, Medicare, like payroll, a ton of things. So once we got rid of that, now we're just using it as a political football back and forth up to get concessions from one party. And it's just like, hey, well, if you raise the debt ceiling, I'll give you this. And it's like, well, if you don't do that, then, you know, we go into a shutdown and the American people suffer. And so to go around that, instead of increasing the debt ceiling, they were thinking about just minting a platinum $1 trillion coin. And I thought it was just a really interesting idea because it's this idea that just, again, like every year we seem to talk about it. And, It's supposed to just solve the problem of raising the debt ceiling so we don't have to use Congress. Instead, we use the Treasury, where the Treasury mints the $1 trillion. We deposit that into the Federal Reserve, and with that, we use it to pay for the expenses. And the funny thing about that is politicians don't want to increase the debt ceiling because they don't want to be the party responsible for basically giving the government a quote-unquote blank check. So they don't want to do the sensible thing, even though it benefits everybody, because both Democrats and Republicans are going to be like, well, you spendy Democrats, or, you know, oh, Republicans just want more tax cuts for the rich. And so, again, it's like this political football that just keeps being tossed back and forth. And it's really silly because increasing the debt ceiling actually benefits everyone. Anyways, this is a really interesting video that you should watch.
Oh, man, don't get me started on the U.S. debt. I just got off the phone with a friend a couple hours ago, and he was just railing on how much our debt is. And you know how much the interest is we have to pay per day. And then he's like, go to the usdebtclock.com.
That's a fun website. That's a fun website. Yeah.
And he's like, put it in the future. Do the time machine version and go 10 years in the future. You're going to be – and it's crazy because it is just massive, massive numbers. But how do we solve that? That was my thing. It's like,
I don't think it needs to be solved, honestly. I mean, the truth is that the U.S. owes a significant portion of the debt to itself. A lot of that is Social Security. you know, interest rates are so low. Their plan is to let inflation just do its thing and whittle away at it. I don't know. I think right now, I mean, it's high, but I don't think it's that big of a deal. And I think as long as the U.S. continues to make its payments, it'll be fine. I think the biggest problem right now is probably just spending absurd amounts of money on who knows what at this point. That's what I think.
But they're going to raise all your taxes to pay for it.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, hopefully, you know what the funny thing is? I mean, it's not really funny, but if they remove the salt cap, but they increase taxes everywhere else, for places like California, New Jersey, New York, the net benefit will probably be you save money on taxes. So it's kind of like, you know, if you're in those states, you'll save. So, you know.
And the problem, too, with this, the $3.5 trillion bill is we're so used to, okay, we do this big stimulus package, and then the money flows pretty quickly, right? PPP loans, EIDL, that stuff went pretty fast. We passed the first stimulus package on March 27th of 2020, and stimulus checks were out by April 15th. Like, that's pretty impressive speed, right? That was when we were in the middle of a crisis. So money flew into the economy very, very quickly. The problem with this $3.5 trillion package is it's not. It's going to flow into the economy over 10 years, but we're going to start increasing taxes immediately, potentially even in some cases retroactively, which is crazy. But that's anyway, you know, really what you're doing is you're taking from the economy to give back in a trickle. So it'll be kind of interesting to see how that plays out.
Kevin, go ahead, Andre.
No, I was going to say, what I don't understand is how when we pass laws and we fund bills, we agree on the law maybe when Congress comes to a vote, but then we don't agree on how to fund it. And then we end up arguing on how to pay for it, even though we already agreed on what it is, which is the funniest thing in the world.
The debt ceiling argument, right?
Yeah.
And I agree. I think what you explained with Newt Gingrich, whatever, Newt, was 100% right on, is the debt ceiling was something that never was a political hot potato, but it became one because it was just an opportunity to negotiate, to hold something else hostage in negotiations. It was never intended for that sort of purpose. But yeah, like when we pass a bill, we fund it either through debt or higher taxes. We just have this like other hot potato then of this debt ceiling, which isn't a problem if we extend the debt ceiling to a certain point. You know, then we spend, it's no problem. We don't really have these arguments, but now we just have everything happening at the same time. The government could shut down in 3 days. You know, Friday we could be in a government shutdown. We could have the debt ceiling, whatever, crisis where our government doesn't pay its obligations starting, what, October 18th is D-Day or X Day is what they're calling it. It's a disaster.
Jeremy, Kevin,
I was going to say, Kevin, if you don't mind, in the group chat, I just sent you something. Let's pull that up for the people. I don't think a lot of people have ever really seen that before. And we can talk over those numbers because that is
the debt clock.
We can talk about these numbers here. I'm sure people a lot of people probably never even seen this before. It really does put into, right in your face, like how big these numbers really are. It's crazy. All right. So, yeah, there we got national debt. So debt per citizen is 86,000.
Hold on. Give me one sec. Let me see if I can quickly make this a little bigger. Did that fully show or was it cropped?
I could full screen you, by the way, Kevin.
Yeah, let's full screen it. We don't need to see our faces for right now. We can just chat.
All right, go ahead.
There you go. All right, there we go.
All right, so, 86,000 debt per citizen. Wow, 228 debt per taxpayer, because so many people aren't even a taxpayer, right?
Like children.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. 228, that's an incredible number. So look at that, U.S. federal debt to GDP ratio.
But, you know, let me ask you this really. Just can we go bounce back to Foursquare for a sec? I want to ask you that. The 228 debt per taxpayer, let's see if we can go back to four, because I don't mean to interrupt, but I think it's an interesting concept to think about. Let's see here. Okay, yeah. 228 per person in debt. Could we individually defend ourselves with tanks and guns and, you know, all like, can we build our own roads? And can we do all of that crap and only have $228,000 of debt per citizen? Like, I just, that popped into my mind, and I'm like, 228 in debt. Wait a minute. for all the things that I'd have to provide without government for myself, that's actually not that bad.
Yeah, that's true.
All right, we'll
go ahead. Depends. I think you could make debates the other way too, but
nope.
Okay. All right. So yeah, okay. Look at that. I think something that people really get crazy at is that U.S. federal debt to GDP ratio. In 1980, we're at 34%, and now we're at 125%. So we have more federal debt than to GDP than by far and away ever before, right? And I think those are some of the most intriguing numbers. I'm trying to see here. Income tax revenue, almost $2 billion. But when you look at some other numbers, it just gets dwarfed.
Yeah, but interest rates back then, you have to think of how much that debt, it's like a mortgage. It's like if you have a 10% interest rate, of course, you're going to buy less house. But when you have a 1% interest rate or a free interest rate, that allows you to buy more house. And so the price of the house is going to go up, but the payment might be the exact same.
Yeah.
Do you guys remember when bonds used to pay 15%? Me neither.
Well, no, because we weren't alive, but we know.
I would have loved to put my money in just bonds at 15% for life. Yes.
Pepperidge Farms remembers.
Pepperidge Farms. That's awesome.
Oh, gosh. But yeah, I can understand why if you look at that calculator, it's a scary thing, man. And that, we didn't even go to like the future in that. You know, you could go to the future and you could look at some of those numbers and it just gets so crazy. It's like insane, right? So
how is this being calculated in real time like that? Like, how is it going up and up and up? Like, wouldn't it go up in spurts, like every time we approve on a bill? Like, how is it?
Well, that would be dramatic. Like that would be boring. So I feel like they must project out, okay, this is what we're planning to do now, and then they'll say, okay, well, we'll hit that number by that date, and we'll just let it scroll from there to there, because really, you're not really owing the money until that day happens. Like, you spend money I'm going to pay a stimulus check, let's say, every day. But technically, you didn't spend that money, even though you may have allocated it. You didn't really spend it yet until each of those days. So I'm sure they just spread it out. But it's way more dramatic with the numbers spinning.
It's so much more dramatic. Yeah. No, it's just definitely running up based on some algorithm. And then if it gets added tremendously, somebody just goes in and just like changes 28, 34. Cool. Let's keep going.
No, change the rate at speed. Faster.
Now, there was one good piece of news we didn't show you on that calculator, and it's actually at the bottom.
Wait, and that's, you're going to say assets per citizen versus liabilities per citizen. Dude, I saw that, and I'm like, well, that's actually not that bad.
That's the one good thing we have, right? But then you think about it this, okay? So 596,000 is the average assets per citizen, right? Versus 473,000 liability per citizen. But imagine
that is still not the case. There is no way that's real. That's just average, which is not accurate.
Well,
average. You got Bill Gates. Come on.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, sure.
Yeah. So think about it this way, right? What if, let's say hypothetically, the real estate market fell in a major way? You know, like I'm just saying like 20%, and the stock market fell 20%. Then we're at a position where possibly our assets are under our liabilities. And it's not like liabilities really change, right? If you still owe a bunch of money in real estate or whatever, you still got those liabilities. You still got that debt there. So it's good right now because real estate's high, stocks are high. But man, if things flip,
I just love how flawed statistics are, though. It's like me and Bill Gates are in the same room. It's like, oh, the average person in that room makes $500 million a year. Okay, thanks. It's just basically that.
Oh, gosh. But so anyways, the question is, are we going to have Social Security when we're up there in age, guys? What do you guys think? Any chance?
Yeah. There's going to be something. Listen, I can't imagine they get rid of Social Security. That would be – I don't think there's anyone who says, let's get rid of it. So I think if the worst case, we get a little bit less. Realistically, they're going to find a way to tax it. Gonna find out the more taxes are gonna be needed, they'll pay it off. They'll find a way.
Become a little bit more like Europe, in other words, where the taxes are higher, the social benefits are higher, but in turn, Europe also has slower growth rates and again higher taxes. But hey, then you have less of the extremes of where you have really rich people and really poor people, and maybe more kind of equally dispersed.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll be interesting, though, if there's ever a way to opt out. I'd be like, you know what? I'm going to choose. I want this money. Now I will opt out. And in return, I'll be on my own. I'll take care of myself.
They thought about that last year. They were taught. Somebody introduced a bill to let you take your Social Security as like a monthly stimulus check. Yeah, but then you wouldn't get a stimulus, or then you wouldn't get Social Security in the future. It didn't go anywhere.
That's crazy. It actually reminds me of AGT, America's Got Talent. So the winner is supposed to win $1 million. But in AGT's contract, it states that they don't have to. So you actually have two choices. You can either get the payout right away at like a 40% discount or 60%, I forget what it was, or you can have it be paid out over a period of time, over the course of your life. And yeah. I have a friend that I know that actually has won, and to this day, he's not received anywhere near that $1 million, because technically they could pay you $1 every year until like your 90th birthday and give you the rest of the $999,000.
I've never heard of that. Usually they're paid as an annuity, and the annuity has a cash value up front. You're always supposed to take the cash value up front.
Right.
Mathematically, it always works in your favor.
If they're going to pay you over time, they theoretically don't have to pay you the full amount until at their discretion, essentially.
I've never heard that before, but I know with the lottery.
Sneaky contracts.
Yeah.
I've seen it.
It's like an Evergrande contract is what that is. You know, we from now on, we call those the Evergrandes. Stay away from those. They're too expensive. They cost you money. Should have been the first red flag when people are like, oh, I can invest in a venti, you know, or a grande coffee or whatever. Big mistake. No, it should be 20-cent iced coffee. I don't know. Does anybody else around here have 20-cent iced coffee?
Hey, now that we're on the subject of Chinese coffee, I'm thinking, what happened to Luckin Coffee?
Oh, I remember that.
Auditing scams, just like how in China you had an auditor in the spring, I think it was May, say, don't worry, Evergrande's totally fine. Everything's good. Just like you had Jim Cramer back in 2008. Say about Bear Stearns. It was like March of 2008. Bear Stearns, Jim Cramer's like, don't take your money out of Bear Stearns at $80. Bear Stearns is fine. 2 months later, sells in liquidation to JP Morgan Chase for $10.
Wow.
Yeah.
Sorry, Luckin.
Yeah.
Luckin. I don't know what will be back. Sorry.
Huh? What's that on, Greg?
Have you guys heard of that coffee, Kopi Luwak?
No, I have not.
Yeah, it's like the most expensive coffee in the world. It's basically cat poo-poo. It's kind of crazy. They harvest it from animals. And you've probably heard about it before.
I've heard of this. Yes, it's supposed to pass through an animal that provides it with like a different taste or something. And then they roast it afterwards. Kopi
Luwak.
Whatever.
You can make a lot of money on bankroll from that, Graham. You should consider it.
Do it.
use humans instead.
Use Jack.
I want to know, we had a rough day in stocks and crypto. What'd y'all do?
Sleep right through it.
What? Andre first? That's what I heard.
I slept right through it.
I love it.
Wait, you slept until 1 p.m.?
I actually slept till 11 today.
I'm so jealous.
Are you serious?
I was up until like 3 a.m. and got two hours of sleep to wake up at 5:11 or whatever it was.
Why'd you sleep in so late? I don't know. I can't
stay up that later.
Yeah, I did stay up late.
Kevin, you're putting out like 10 videos a day, man. That's why you like you're on the grind more than ever. Holy smoke, is that even the focus? So I'm still obsessed with the debt clock, guys. I got to go back there. Okay, I'm sorry. Sorry, we're going back to the debt clock. Okay. 2025, the debt clock says 176% debt to GDP.
Oh, wait, I got to fade it.
I think we should screenshot this and see if it's accurate. $1.6 million assets per citizen versus 596.
Look at these numbers. Just look at them.
Oh, man. Well, anyways.
Talk about the housing market. That's kind of interesting.
How do you skip over the stock market? How do we talk about the stock market? Yeah.
No one wants to talk about stocks.
I'll talk about it. I loaded up on the usual, okay? I bought my usual. I bought a little bit more on the – I noticed, like, towards the end of the day, things were accelerating. So I bought more of the usual that you could also find out down below in the description. Mm-hmm. But that was a good plug in the description. but anyway, you know what I found interesting is still, you know, I'm sorting through my list of stocks, and there's really nothing in there that was at a price where it's like, wow, I can't believe it's trading at this level. A lot of these were the same prices that we saw last week.
Yeah,
we got a run up, and now we just got a run. Basically, we're down to last week's values. Not on everything. There's some stocks that, you know, I think are reasonable, but I don't know. There's nothing out there that was like, I can't believe this is selling for this.
Enphase is I bought Enphase. I just look. I had to spend money today. I don't know. It was a problem. I even like wrote a message. I'm like, okay, I'm done sending alerts. I'm done buying stocks. And like 2 hours later, I bought more. And then like 2 hours later, I bought some crypto. I bought Ethereum. Oh, I got so pissed at Coinbase this morning, by the way. Like Ethereum was like right where I wanted it. And I almost pulled my hair out at how crappy the app is right in the middle of like, you're trying to like do a trade. And it's like, I'm trying to buy Ethereum with USDC, and how am I supposed to know I can't just go into Ethereum and buy it there? Apparently, I have to go to USDC and then figure out USDC exchanges, and it's like, this is why Robinhood actually has merit. They make stuff easy. You know, people like to crap on Robinhood, but I'll tell you, before Robinhood came around, nobody was talking about options as much as they do today.
How is Ethereum 2800 right now with all the miner fear? It should be 2700. Wait, so what price did you get in at?
Oh, I don't know. I bought twice today.
Were you trying to get in at 2750?
I don't know. I bought once this morning. It was probably like 28, and then I bought again later today. Cardano though, and I think that was right around I don't know where Ethereum, what it's actually, it hasn't moved that much. Where is it now? Ethereum's at 2847. No, I bought Cardano at like 204 or something like that, which I think is right where it is now. No, it's at 206 now. But whatever. The point is, I added in a little bit. And but yeah, I definitely went stock shopping. I hope we get a nice rebound tomorrow too. To me, it's just nonsense, this anxiety the market's seeing all of a sudden.
I don't even think anybody realizes why.
Sorry.
Yeah, not if Evergrande has anything to say about it. So let's.
Well, that's the big thing, in my opinion. It's just Evergrande,
right?
Do you, Andre and Kevin, do you guys feel like in any way like Cardano or Cardano or whatever ADA,
Grant Cardano,
Ethereum, yeah, and Ethereum are at war at all? Like, do you feel like those? There's kind of like investor bases polling like ADA is the way to go. No, Ethereum's the way to go. Do you feel like those are at battle a little bit or not really?
Yeah, absolutely. 100%. They're
expanding pie.
You have one unheard message.
Hi, I was calling Current, the influencer marketing platform, but I think I just got redirected to a bunch of people listening to a podcast. Well, anyways, I was calling Current because I was told they could help get my brand set up on TikTok Shop and even build out an affiliate program of content creators promoting my brand and even have those content creators go on live streams and promote my product there. Wow, I could really use Current. I also heard that the brands they work with are making millions in sales. I guess I'll just go to their website at current.tech.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Okay.
Yeah, well, you know, Charles Hoskinson, the guy who created Cardano, he was one of the co-founders of Ethereum. So naturally, there have to be some tensions.
Yeah. Wow. See, at least, though, with crypto, you get an expanding pie. With Tattooed Chef, all you get are expanded bowels.
Kevin, I've been so peaceful. Just
Kevin went there. Jeremy, what do you have to say? What do you have to say about it? You're not going to let Kevin get away with that, are you?
Okay, Graham, don't start me, man. Once I go down that rabbit hole, man, we're not coming back.
I just want to pour gasoline over this. Just see
No. I don't want to go there. But anyways, so I was thinking about buying some stocks today, guys. But right before I started buying, I started thinking about the U.S. debt clock. And have you guys
Let's pull that up once more.
Have you guys seen what it's at? Oh, Kevin, what is that? That's nice. That's a nice mask.
This is for the alliance. I'm trying to signal that we should have an alliance, not the enemies.
Oh, that's nice, man. I appreciate that. By the way, is that an actual real mask that actually works, Kevin? Or is that just like...
This is an actual real mask that you can buy off Etsy. In terms of efficacy against COVID, it's basically zero. But it gets me into the restaurants.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Oh, wait. Let me look, this is YouTube. We have to wear it appropriately.
It's me every time I go out and I have an excuse. I just bring a little bit of water bottle and I'm just like always with my mask off. I'm just always drinking at like a turtle pace.
Gosh. What is it? You're walking around and it's just, you're just walking around like this. All right, guys. Let's continue with the buy the dip mug. Yeah. I'm taking a sip.
Oh gosh, that's funny. So question is, back to ADA and Ethereum, could one of those win and the other one lose, or would you guys say they're both destined for massive success? And where do you see the massive success coming for those as far as actual applications for both of those?
I can't answer that last question. I don't know. We'll find out. But I think Ethereum and Cardano will definitely coexist. I think Ethereum's pretty much guaranteed to succeed at, well, they already are. I think Cardano, as long as they become, I guess, decentralized. I think they'll definitely succeed. Cardano. I've been trying to get Charles Hoskinson on to come to my YouTube channel, but I can't get to him. I got him on Twitter. He's like, yeah, I'll do it. And then he never did. So I'd love to hear more about it from him because obviously he understands the project really well, but I'm not super cued in on Cardano. I know Kevin knows probably a lot more than I do about it.
So you don't, Kevin,
can give us a bullish case on Cardano.
You don't own Cardano, Andre?
I do, but not a ton. I do, not a ton.
Wow. No. So you put money in something you don't even know about. That's intriguing.
Yeah. Yeah. Kind of like you with Voyager. Not, you know.
Well, why would you do that? One has real world applications, and one you just said you don't even know what's going on there. I just don't get it, man.
No, I know what's going on. I have a vague idea, but I don't want to give people specifics because, again, crypto is like this rabbit hole where if you explain one little detail wrong, people are just going to eat you alive. So I don't want to talk out of turn and say something.
Oh, that's a bunch of baloney. All right, Kevin, maybe you're man enough to do something here and explain Cardano. Holy smoke.
It's just supposed to be cheaper, faster, more efficient, you know, more blocks processed than Ethereum. Ethereum has its upgrades coming. Cardano has its upgrades coming to Ethereum's upgrades. It's just a constant give and take. Ultimately, what's going to happen is you're going to create marketplaces where companies, it's going to be up to the private market to determine, okay, I can provide better, faster, smart contracts using this particular technology, right? That's what it's going to come down to, is an actual use. And who knows, maybe in the future that'll be insurance, or it'll be like decentralized arbitration for disputes, or some form contracts of, I don't know, transactions or whatever. But we've also got great ways of conducting transactions now. So, you know, who knows? I don't know. Maybe there'll be a crypto killer for a firm, the buy now, pay later platform. Sure. It'll be like a decentralized buy now, pay later, right? endless opportunities. I think now the excitement for crypto is around, wow, we can do so much. Now let's see what is actually profitable that works faster and in a more secured manner. I certainly think one of the biggest opportunities is just transferring money faster. Like, for example, I want to wire money to Webull. If I miss the wire cutoff time, I got to wait for the next day to send. They don't process it until midnight. So I'm not going to get my funds to Webull until Thursday. It's like that could happen, you know, within 15 minutes with Bitcoin. That could happen, very quickly with the other platforms, even quicker with the others. So I think the actual uses are still being developed, but there's so much excitement over blockchain and getting away from, really centralized finance. So, we'll see what private markets create.
Another big opportunity, Jeremy, is also for the legal industry to, I guess, migrate some of the contracts over to smart contracts, because then we wouldn't have to have maybe arbitrage in the courts because you sign smart contracts that outline certain laws and things like that. A lot of people are expecting, that's going to end up on the blockchain. Stocks are going to go on the blockchain, And every blockchain, by the way, has what's called the trilemma problem. And this is something Vitalik Buterin, the creator of Ethereum, talked about, which is the trilemma is that there's three options that you have. There's decentralization, scalability, and what was the third one? And security. So you kind of have to pick two right now. Cardano and Ethereum are probably the closest blockchains that are trying to solve all three through various methods of very complicated technologies that there's just like a can of worms we probably don't want to open up, but those are the three that we are always focusing on. Now, Bitcoin, as we know it right now, is very heavy on two. It's heavy on decentralization and security, but it cannot scale very well because, like, if you think of crypto as like a game character, it's like we put all of our EXP or of our points into just two of them. For decentralization, security is what Bitcoin's really good at, but it can't really scale really well. You have similar problems with Ethereum and Cardano, where they're really scalable and they're really secure, but they're not necessarily the most decentralized. And so, as you know, to Kevin's point, we're going to find niche blockchains that are good at whatever specific application needs it to be good at. So in Bitcoin's case, if you want the application of money, you want it to be secure and decentralized, right? Those are the biggest priorities. You don't necessarily need it to scale. Again, if we don't use Bitcoin as a currency, who cares? It's going to be a kind of like a gold 2.0. But if you were to use smart contracts and like crazy things like NFTs, then you probably want it to be cheap and scalable to people around the world. And so again, different kind of niche concepts will benefit certain blockchains.
I don't know if that's So let me ask you this. Shout out to all our Millennial Money members. We got one of our members, Javier. He says, Cardano doesn't work. He says, where is Cardano smart contracts working? He says, I'm a developer waiting for Cardano to do smart contracts. That's what he's saying. Do you have any response to that?
Well, look, he's also pumping another coin and he's been spamming this for the last 10 minutes. So we can go into, we can go long on crypto discussions, but I don't know. Do we really want to go down the rabbit hole?
This for like 30 seconds.
I think
30 seconds. And let's get back to stocks. So Cardano started doing sample contracts in their prior versions, but they just did a big Hydra update and they just came out with a new opportunity essentially for everybody to do smart contracts rather than just select smaller groups. And so look, when a platform's brand freaking new, people who are pumping other coins are probably not going to have the patience to learn a new platform. And this is really what Charles Hoskinson has been saying is, hey, look, you've got to create something that functions for this specific platform. And I think let's probably leave it at that. There's always going to be hate and complaints for something that's new. I don't really care. Don't buy Cardano. It doesn't matter to me.
I don't look at it as hate or complaints. I think that's completely the wrong way you're looking at it, Kevin. I think it's a fair question he's asking. Are they doing smart contracts right now or not?
Yeah.
They
I did just answer that they just came out with smart contracts. It's a brand new thing that now everybody has access to. And I said it's going to take time. So my point is, when somebody's spamming the same thing, we pick up on that one thing to go, oh, they're a developer. They must have the unlimited knowledge. Okay, that's it. We got to go with the level of skepticism and probably have a full, more detailed conversation about it. But look, hey, if you're not, here's the thing. if my belief is, whether it's a stock, whether it's real estate or it's crypto, if you don't believe in it, don't invest in it. Because if it goes down, you're going to sell it at a loss. Do not invest in something you don't believe in. When I go through a house and I'm like, you know, I could run some numbers, maybe make this work. But if I don't feel it, I'm out of there. I don't buy it. It's the same thing for stocks. I get into a stock. Sometimes I change my mind and I'm like, you know what? Maybe I looked at this wrong. I'm out of there. You know, that's what I did with Tattoo Chef. You know, I went into it really bullish. And I thought, hey, this to me is a $20 stock. And it was like 17 or 16 at the time when I bought it. Ran to $24. I got out. You know, I changed my mind. So no matter what it is, everybody can have different opinions. It's the same for coins as it is for real estate, as it is for stocks.
Yeah. The unfortunate part though about crypto's opinions is just people are so irrational with behind their opinions that there's less logic and there's more emotion, and people treat it like a sports team.
That's what I'm getting to. I'm like, I don't get it. Cause I mean, every single stock I ever talk about, I get second guessed by 1,000 people. Like, why are you buying that stock? Right. I don't know about that stock. And it's like, right. I accept that as a stock market investor. Yeah. I know there's going to be a million people that are either against that stock or like, I don't know, that sounds like a crap stock.
Yeah, there's logical conversations around it. But in crypto, there is no logic. It's like, you like this coin, you're a scammer. And it's just like, I hate making crypto videos for that reason, because there's no logical conversation. It's just like, either people think you're a scammer that's pumping something, or you're the smartest person in the world. Like, there's no in between. There's no intellectual conversation that happens.
That's exactly the issue. I feel like there's a lot of issues. One, Andre, you felt a little scared to speak about this Cardano because you're like, people get a little crazy. It's like, that's BS. Like, speak about it. Like, if you make a mistake, who cares? Like, if I make a mistake on a stock, who cares? Like, it is what it is. Except, and then Kevin, I felt like you just got really offensive.
I think people can take things out of context, and you know, you don't want to look like the idiot. So. I just don't,
you know, it's like speaking about religion, Jeremy. If you say something bad about the other guy's religion, they're coming for you. They get angry.
Yeah. Right.
Angry.
I disagree. Yeah. I mean, I agree with what Graham's saying, that yes, there's a lot of that. That's almost like, it's like politics. Like, like, you don't care. In California's last election, you don't care about the policies of Gavin Newsom. You care about the fact that you hate the other person and you're fearful of the other person, right? It's kind of like that in politics. Same thing if you were like a Larry Elder fan. You hate Gavin Newsom, right? And it doesn't matter what the policies are or the details are. But, I mean, just to respond, I mean, I don't think I necessarily get like mad. I just think I get passionate about my responses, that we've got to be clear and put all the context together. You know, somebody who's crapping on one coin, but then notorious and regularly spamming another coin, it's kind of like, wait a minute. When you ask the question, let's make sure we also include that context.
Right.
Yeah. No, that's fair enough. But yeah, I love a fundamental discussion about different things, whether stocks or cryptos, and like, what is, so people are aware of what's actually happening with these projects, where they're actually at, because it's so much hype in hysteria. And it's like, okay, where are they actually at? Like, what is really going on right now? What's the truth behind this? Right.
Well, the downside, Jeremy, is that in crypto, the fundamentals go through a phase, because if you create a blockchain, if you create a coin, it kind of has all three, that trilemma I talked about, the security, the decentralization, scalability. Every crypto is perfect when there's like 100 people using it. And that's why when the internet, the person who's not necessarily like the most intelligent about that thing, they're not like a software developer, they can't read the code. When they discover it, they're like, this is the coolest thing in the world. I just found the Holy Grail, right? And it really is, because it works when there's 100 people that know about it. But as the technology scales, it becomes bigger, the problems become more obvious. And that trilemma starts to really rear its head. And then you realize like, oh my gosh, I understand now why people are going for Bitcoin and Ethereum or Cardano or whatever it is. It's because they're scaled at a massive amount of people. And so we know a lot more about those projects than we do some of the like the nascent little ones that no one talks about, but people pump about all the time, because they really are perfect because there's 100 people using it.
Yeah, that makes
point is, fundamentals change as the project gets bigger. Whereas in stocks, it's not quite like that. Like, once you make a fundamental case for a stock, you could believe in that and you can ride it to the moon. It doesn't really change to that degree like crypto does.
That makes a lot of sense there, Andre. And I've definitely heard over time a lot of these projects, you know, the bullish thesis around them, if we want to call it that, changes, right? Bitcoin right. back in 17, 18 was like, everybody's going to use this for all transactions. And I don't hear anybody saying that now.
That was it's, a tulip. I think you're thinking about tulips, not Bitcoin.
So no, that's all I heard back in the day. And now it's like, well, no, Bitcoin, it's a store of wealth. It's like a digital gold, you know, and that's a thing.
Why is that? It's because in the beginning, in 17, 18, back in my, anyway, it's because back then, very few people used it, which means miners could charge less in cost than transaction cost. So we did use it. And as it became more popular, we couldn't scale it. The fees became extremely high and the narrative changed to, wait a minute, if we want to keep this technology in the same incarnation as it is now, it can't be a currency. It has to be a store of value. Mm-hmm. That's my whole point. Like, it evolves as it becomes bigger and you start to discover its problems.
Bitcoin will never be the world's currency. I think it's a great opportunity for countries like El Salvador to basically what they're doing is they're recognizing they can't operate their own currency because nobody trusts the government of 6.8 million people who's going to have their own currency and potentially mismanage it. So why not just peg your own to something you can't really manipulate? You know, El Salvador's economy is a rounding error for this $3.5 trillion infrastructure package that we're talking about in Congress, right? It's so tiny. Like, look, for countries like that, great, go for it. Crypto wallets, awesome. But what I think will really be a currency will be something like a digital dollar. And this is when we get people choosing, I'm going to use USDC, which is not from the federal government, right? Even though it sounds like it is USDC. But then we actually get a real digital dollar, a central bank digital currency. That's what's going to be our money. That's the kind of stuff that we use. What kind of network it uses, that's going to be interesting. Who knows? Maybe it all gets built out on the Ethereum network, right? Or Cardano network or whatever. It's probably not going to be the Bitcoin network, certainly not this one. Maybe when they upgrade, but that'll be fascinating.
Right.
Cool. Grant. What about real estate? Do we want to transition to real estate?
I think we should talk about this whole Zillow thing. Kevin, did you see that you were featured on Philip DeFranco today?
I did. I actually saw it like 30 minutes before Millennial Money. I'm like, oh, snap. And it was after the whole Gabby Petito thing, which I'm like, my heart goes out for that. I've been wanting to make videos about Gabby, and I haven't gotten around to it, but I've been following the story like crazy. And like, I want all the attention on her. I will say though, I felt honored to be in that same video on like that level of a Philip DeFranco video. So
I agree with your argument. I watched that TikTok. I thought it was the stupidest thing I have ever seen. And it blows my mind how kids are eating this up on TikTok. You know, I swear some guy could say whatever he wants on TikTok and they're doing it. And you know what? People love pointing the finger. They hate Zillow. They hate Redfin. Yes. Any big company is bad. Anyone making money is bad. Anyone making a profit, that's shameful. And I'm listening. It makes no sense. He's pulling figures out of his rear end. Nothing. There's no facts. And I'm saying like you, Kevin, I'm like, do you realize how big of an undertaking that would be to buy up a neighborhood, drive up the price above market value? Like, come on. It's like buying every iPhone and be like, all right, well, now the iPhone's $5,000.
Graham's triggered.
That's stupid. Because there's two things that I don't like. I can't seem to get into TikTok. So already, anything over there, it's just like, I'm against it already. And then people who spread misinformation about real estate.
Yeah,
it's common sense. It's not something that takes nuance to understand. This isn't something that like you really have to dive into the research and be like, okay, no, they're not doing that. It's just blatant, like just misinformation that people.
That's because Graham, you're part of the elite real estate club.
Graham, can you get into a little bit about what this guy was saying? Because I'm sure a lot of our viewers don't even have a clue what's actually going on here. Right.
This guy has the audacity to say that Zillow is paying above market value for homes. By the way, I did do research on that, and they are paying a very competitive price for real estate. Okay. So I'll give them that. Okay. But his claim is that, wait a second, if they go and buy every house in the neighborhood, then they could set their own market value. And then they could start selling them off to people at 20% markups. But it's like any rational person would think about this. Think that's stupid. It's bad. It doesn't make any sense. So, but people don't think. They take advice from this guy on TikTok who makes up, he's spreading lies, really. But his argument is that Zillow would buy up all of these houses and then sit on them and then mark them up because they take over the inventory. They don't realize that, like, first of all, to buy enough real estate to actually make an impact on the market value would take decades and more money than Zillow would know what to do with. They would have to so strategically buy it. And then what happens where all of a sudden all your neighbors sold to Zillow and you're like one of the last remaining ones. Don't you go and say, well, Zillow, I see you're buying everything. How about mine? I'm not going to sell unless you offer me 10 times market value. It's just like, it doesn't make sense. It's stupid. Kevin addressed it in his video. I thought Kevin was more respectful than I was about this. It's just, it's so bad. I don't know.
Well, here's the thing. Look, this is the problem with I wanted to do a TikTok reaction to it, but the problem is it takes more than a minute to respond to it. Even a 3 minute is not enough. If you get a 3 minute TikTok and the attention span is much shorter on TikTok, it took me 8 minutes to deconstruct the bull crap he spewed in 1 minute. And that's a pisser, because that's exactly, like you said, Graham, how misinformation spreads. I think it even elevates to the status of disinformation. It's almost like the intention of the video is, let me come up with some bull crap to show how corporations are greedy. And it's just full speculation, no research, no evidence, no citations. It's literally just bull crap. It's to me, it's just as bad as saying, you know what? That person walking down the streets, he just took his pants off and did something to himself in front of children over there. Please arrest that person. It's just it's going to take way longer to defend yourself against that kind of thing if the cops show up or when the cops show up than it is for that person to make the accusation. 20-second accusation could be a 20-minute police stop for somebody else and an investigation. It's ludicrous, and it's just blatantly wrong.
So did this thing actually blow up that big and get that popular?
It blew up so big that Zillow responded to it.
Yeah.
This thing got
we're talking like millions of views?
Yeah. What?
How many?
I believe so.
4 million, 5 million views in like a week. Okay. And a very, like the way the TikTok algorithm works, if it finds something, and here's the thing, the problem is that people are looking for a reason to be triggered. They're looking for something to be angry at. And when they're scrolling elephant toothpaste videos and they come across this and they're like, that's the reason I'm angry. This, let me share this. Wow, this guy just like came up. That's so then that's how this spreads. But what Kevin was saying is like, you have to think like the mentality of someone watching that isn't going to listen to a well thought out argument. That takes too much brain to do that. So instead, it's like, this is bad. They're doing this. This is big deal. That's all they can do. So the problem is that like information like that spreads really, really, really fast, and then it dies out. But when it spreads like that, because of how easy that is to digest, Zillow is, they have to respond to that. It's not like YouTube where it's like, it'll get views over like a year. This thing will get views for like a few days and it's dead.
And the problem too is, The original misinformation, disinformation will get way more views than the actual responses or follow-ups. And that's the problem, because you get triggered, but then you never hear reality. And the same thing happens in our elections, and it's a big problem.
Well, the way that I addressed it, because I'm making a video about it on Friday, isn't quite as passionately dismissive as you guys, because I'm not a real estate agent and a
well, perfect. Then I can respond to you messing it up.
Yeah, that's fine. No. I'm not agreeing to his video. I'm just saying that kind of like how, you know, we have Trojan horse video titles in YouTube.
Yeah.
It's more of like a Trojan horse approach where it's like, because I actually looked up at the Vegas real estate market to look at all the Zillow offerings. Now they have like 46 houses here in Vegas out of like 4,000. So they're not making any dent whatsoever. But in the video, I actually show quite a few of the properties they own, which, I mean, I can tell you an address right now, that, and I've had like five or six examples of just like the ones I've checked that they do actually buy. So if you want to look it up and if you want to throw it on screen, I can show you, but I'll just read it to you right here. They bought a house. So somebody listed for sale, 6/11/2021 for $525K. Okay. So it sat on the market until June, July, August 5th. And then they sold it to Zillow for, let's see, $569,000. So whatever, $44,000 above asking.
What's the address?
And that's after, here, I'll show you. It is 6640 Chimes Tower Avenue. 6640.
A whole bunch of subscribers showing up now.
No, I have quite a few examples of really interesting data where just kind of like, why is that happening? They list something for sale, it sits on the market for like a month, and then they get offered like 30 or 40,000 above asking, which looks very suspicious.
You know what? But Zillow has a whole bunch of money where they could throw at this thing just for inventory. So
just for tax loss purposes.
But think of this, like, instead of them spending $30,000 on marketing, their version of marketing is what we're talking about here. Hey, Zillow's paying a high price for the house. Maybe I should sell my house to Zillow. And then they get a whole bunch of people going and trying to sell their houses to Zillow, and Zillow could gain some market share.
And the reason that I think that's going on is just because they want to do the Amazon model where they could operate on loss for a few years. All they want to do is just have everyone have like the best user experience. Like, oh, you want to sell your house? Cool. Press this button on Zillow. It's sold. You know, they just want like the best user experience. And if they have to operate at a loss for a few years and get some tax write-offs, they don't care. And I think in the short term, it's like way overblown. But I think long term, like if we're to look at like late stage capitalism, yeah, this could be a problem, which is why I think people are reacting the way they are, is because if you extrapolate this data 30, 40 years in the future, if they truly do own a lot of the market, then yeah, it would be a problem.
So Zillow's a stock I've always thought about owning. And I've always kept an eye on it. I remember a few years ago.
Look at that. Sorry, Jeremy. Don't interrupt you. So, okay, property history. It's sold to Zillow. We'll look at property history.
This is sus. This is weird.
Okay, I can give you five more examples like that. That doesn't add up. That doesn't make sense. And like I said, the most sense that it makes is just like they're probably just taking a loss for either advertising or tax write-offs or whatever it is. But I'm telling you, I can give you like three or four more examples right now.
Yeah, this like, I mean, well, first of all, let's just make it very clear.
How does that make sense? It's sitting for a month and a half, no offers. Wouldn't you get a discount on that? Why would you overpay? It's not getting a lot of offers.
We got to separate these things.
Okay.
Number one, I just want to make it crystal freaking clear that the TikTok guy's argument was that it's really easy to buy up homes in the same neighborhood for $300,000 and then your last one overpay for it and then raise the price of all the homes, right?
Silly.
Because somehow you could raise the price of all homes with one comp, which is not true anyway. So completely fallacious argument. You can't get that many homes in the same neighborhoods anyway. Okay, now this particular listing. Now let's get to what you're talking about here. So in this particular listing, there are two things that could have happened here. Number one, it's very worth noting that this house was a rental property. It sold in February of 2020, right before the pandemic, for $419,000. We know that, and it's probably different in Vegas, but roughly home prices went up about 20% nationwide, roughly 20%. So this is about a $500,000 property. Probably this seller decided, or the person who bought it, decided to resell it now in the summer of 2021 because home prices went up so much. Price goes to $525,000 is what they listed for. It looks like it sat on the market, like you said, for about a month or whatever. They removed it, and then it shows sold to Zillow for $569,000, which is odd. Okay, why is it higher than the list price? I agree, that's odd. I wonder what that contract looks like, because that is weird. I agree with you. This should have sold for less, not more.
Right.
Now, let me ask you. what if they had multiple offers? What if they had another offer on the table and Zillow said, okay, we'll match?
Yes.
That doesn't make sense. I don't know. That doesn't make sense. Why would they have a competing offer when it's been sitting for over a month?
You never know. Yeah.
So that's where it's weird, because if it was multiple offers at 525, then you'd think that the market would have been more receptive to offering on this property around 549 a month or two later. But then again, the market has cooled. So yeah, maybe this is a potential explanation, is maybe when they got this deal into contract, they got this deal in July thinking the market's hot, it's booming, things are moving, prices are going up like crazy. Problem is, when you look at the data, home sales have slowed down. They slowed down right when the school season started. School season started right when they listed this property thinking, we're going to get a profit on this. We put 10 grand of new paint into it. Now we're going to turn around and flip it. But unfortunately, the market turns on them. They way overpriced the darn thing. It was maybe worth that. Maybe it was worth 569 there. But now the market slowed down. Price goes down. They list for way above. The listing turns stale because here they are leaving out on the market for over a month and they're still overpriced. And so now it'll probably sell for, you know, well, it's going to sell for less than they paid for it. So my take here is that this is probably a shift in the Vegas real estate market more than it is Zillow. Like it's whoever bought the house for Zillow was being stupid. Let's put it that way. They didn't analyze the data. They didn't look at the Redfin data center, probably because they work at Zillow. Sorry, I had to throw that little jab in there. But anyway, this to me looks like a market shift and buyer stupidity, in this case, Zillow stupidity, which could go back to Graham's argument that it was okay to overpay for marketing purposes.
Yeah, yeah. It's also weird. I have to say, whoever listed it for 601-200, it would be like any agent would be like, just 599'd it. That's it.
Yeah, like dumb listing price too. It goes to show the employees that Zillow has are being idiots, because Zillow's probably like, growth at all costs. We must compete against Open Door. We must compete against Redfin. And here they are overpaying because they think, oh, the market's going crazy, and they don't realize the school system shift. And then 601, good catch, Graham. That's dumb.
Yeah.
So that's a great explanation for why they did that. But still, I think as far as people's overreaction about like how, you know, maybe corporations shouldn't be buying homes, I think it's still valid, because if you get to the extreme end of that, and corporations start buying homes and they start to actually control big markets in the future, like this is not a good example of that, because they only have 46 homes in Las Vegas out of 4,000. So it's a very small dent. But is it really that hard to believe in a foreseeable future where these kinds of companies do have enough capital to buy up a substantial amount, regardless of their listing price being stupid or not? The fact that they have the capital to then buy up these kinds of homes and overpay for them, isn't that a potential problem in the future? I think that's a fair case to say, like, maybe we should be wary about that.
No, I don't think so at all. I think that corporations are essentially just like people, and that there might be people with more money. There might be corporations or LLCs with more money, but it's a competitive market. Just like there's Redfin, Zillow, and Opendoor, they are competing against every mom and pop investor. They're competing against syndicates. They're competing against BlackRock and Invitation Homes, right? It's a very competitive landscape. And ultimately, the people who win in that kind of landscape, the more buyers you get in a market, the people who win are the people who bought real estate earlier. So the lesson is, don't wait to buy real estate. Buy real estate and wait, and don't overpay like Zillow.
Yeah, so I guess Kevin's fundamental argument is just like, hey, just let capitalism run its course. And then the other people that are upset are like, well, you know, maybe there's a limit for which we don't allow certain corporations with access to billions of dollars and leverage power to just buy up neighborhoods. So I'm not saying that that's one is right or the other is wrong. I think it is a competing perspective.
No, I'm right. If government really cared about making sure we had affordable homes, they would allow people to build more freaking homes, which at least y'all do in Vegas. Okay, I'm going to give you that. That could also be why you see some softness in a 90s house here, because you guys do build a lot of homes, which gives buyers a more affordable opportunity to buy in. See, here's a corporation that lost money. Now a home buyer can buy this house at a discount because a corporation was a dumbass. Now the buyer is getting a better deal. They got an improved house at a discount and the corporation lost money. You want to screw the corporation? Go buy this house from Zillow and make them lose money. There you go. You screwed the corporation. You win. You go to California. California doesn't build enough homes. The problem is government sucks. And you got to build more homes.
Okay. So here's a question. How many homes are there total in Las Vegas, roughly? Do you know that, Andre?
4,000 listed about in Las Vegas. Yeah.
I was talking about like how many homes there are in total in Las Vegas. Like not. Okay. I don't know if you can find that, Kevin, because I think it would be fun to run numbers on, let's say, a market like Las Vegas. Take how many homes there are average selling price.
259,000.
Okay. So if we times out 259,000 times, let's say, $350,000, which I don't know if that's our average home price here, or maybe we're higher than that. But what's that? What would be that number there, Kevin?
It's so much larger than I expected, sir. It's going to take me a little longer.
Okay.
I believe this is $90.6 billion.
Okay. Because where I'm taking this is with Andre talking about, you know, let's say big corporation buying up. What I was trying to do is I was trying to say, okay, could Apple, with just Apple's cash, buy up the entire Las Vegas real estate market? And it sounds like Apple could, hypothetically, right? Of course, it wouldn't work that way, right? Prices would just go crazy if Apple all of a sudden decided to buy every house in Vegas. So it doesn't work like that. But hypothetically, Apple has enough cash to literally buy out the entire
Lot. And I'm not arguing against Kevin. All I'm saying is that I could see a theoretical possibility in the very late future where, like Jeremy said, that could be a scenario where that could happen. And homes just become like ridiculously overpriced. And in the future, no one's going to be able to afford their own home. That could be a scenario. I'm not saying that that's going to happen, but I can see why people get confused and think that and get upset about when they.
Andre, your internet.
Andre.
Crazy. Your internet's crazy, Andre. Yeah. You're cutting left and right.
Hasn't paid his bills. Come on.
I thought you guys were frozen. Are you guys frozen? I wasn't sure.
Andre, we can't hear you. Okay, so anyways, I want to wrap up this Zillow thing with one more frame of thought here. As I looked in the stock many times, I remember when they first started this idea, they're going to actually start buying homes, right? Zillow's like, we're going to start buying homes. My first thought is, okay, imagine they take out a ton of debt, they buy a massive amount of homes, and then the real estate market tanks. And then they're holding all these homes that are, let's say, significantly overvalued because they got way over levered. And then next thing you know, Zillow's bankrupt because they way over levered themselves. And it's not like Zillow, if you look at their revenues, it's not like this is some massive business that's like, wow, Zillow's such a beast. Like, heck no. And it's not like it's an insanely profitable business model either the way it is. So I mean, imagine they take out way too much debt. The real estate market tanks for whatever reason. Next thing you know, they're belly up because they come way over leveraged. So that was my thought back in the day.
Fairness, China, you know, this reference here to Evergrande, China encouraged the debt taking. And China is the one who last August pulled the rug and said, nah, just kidding. We don't want you taking on this much debt anymore.
Yeah.
You know? So like this is an example of a confused government is Evergrande. You can't solely blame Evergrande. It's the Chinese government is heavily responsible for the disaster that they've created with their U-turns on policies. But look, the United States government has done stupid things as well. Look at 2008. You know, now we purposefully have laws that prevent that kind of 2008 style buildup again. So I'm optimistic. And look, I just quickly want to say, because I know we want to wrap up here, but there was a comment here, I don't know, somewhere somebody was saying that, oh, here it is. Ireland has a housing crisis, high rents that are far beyond income due to REITs and corporations buying up and driving all the housing costs nationally. So this, by the way, is really populist argument. But what we got to do is we got to actually look at the data, which we're not going to do right now. But quick summaries, How many homes are REITs and corporations actually buying compared to home buyers? How much stimulus did Ireland have? And how much more money was created in Ireland, which drove up rents just like it did here in America, right? How many people relocated from downtowns to the suburbs, driving up rents because now there are more people wanting to move into homes? And how many fewer people wanted to sell or rent out their homes because of COVID, right? So there's so much at play. You can't just summarize real estate in a TikTok, in a tweet, or a little paragraph on the YouTube comments. There's so much at play. And when you are in real estate, it makes a lot more sense. And that's why I encourage everybody to buy real estate.
That's good. That's a great way to end the video. It's also a great way to encourage people to use the link in the description. So as I mentioned earlier, we got our first sponsor. And what we're doing is a little bit of a challenge between us. We're each picking five stocks and seeing which one of ours performs the best. So anyway, if you want that list, down below in the description. Thank you guys so much for watching. Also, make sure to check out the Millennial Money Clips channel. That is down below in the description. All of our information is there. Make sure to subscribe if you haven't done that already. Super easy to do. Takes you a split second. Hit the like button. Thank you guys so much for watching. And until next time.
Peace.
Spring is in full bloom. Are your finances? With the Chime Secured Credit Builder Visa credit card, you can build credit with everyday purchases and regular on-time payments, all with no annual fees or interest. With Chime's secure credit card, you can start improving your credit scores right away. Get started today at chime.com/build. That's chime.com/build. Chime feels like progress. The Chime Credit Builder Visa credit card is issued by the Bancorp Bank N.A. or Stride Bank N.A. members FDIC. Out-of-network ATM withdrawal and OTC advance fees may apply. Terms and conditions apply. Go to chime.com/disclosures for details.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.